Welcome to Generation Radio Podcast, where the focus is on Arkapuna and their families. We are here each Sunday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. on the Oldies Channel, 101.1. You can listen to these shows at any time, any place, and even on your smartphone at generations808.com. We will bring to you resourceful information from our Generations team of experts in the field of aging. Stay with us for the next 1 hour as we explore ways to make your life more exciting and meaningful for our extraordinary seniors. Here's your host and publisher of Generations Magazine, Percy Ihara.
Welcome back to Generations Radio. I am Percy Ihara, your host here every Sunday morning from 8 to 9 o'clock here on 101.1, the Oldies Channel. And guys, thanks for tuning in. If you're on the way to a golf course, please tell your friends. And I know if you have a tea time, you got to leave. But anyway, if you forget or miss the show, go to generations808.com. And you can list all the past radio shows. And it's just a tremendous following that we've received. And thank you very much for everybody tuning in. So anyway, I'm the publisher, editor of Generations Magazine. And for full disclosure, my day job is the reverse mortgage. So we are trying to keep it separate. But it is what it is, and I'm very fortunate to have the magazine to educate myself as well, including all our followers. You know, educating yourself about aging is so important. And we want to try and be proactive versus reactive, and that's the reason why we do all these stories. So in our past issue on a quest to cure cancer, we had a story written by Wendy Sweet, one of our feature writers. And she worked a lot with one of our great local professors, doctors from the University of Hawaii Cancer Center, Dr. Brenda Hernandez. So, Brenda, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Percy. Thank you for inviting me to talk today.
Yeah, you know, I met you at the Wendy's golf tournament, and I'm a big football fan, too. I know who her husband is, Darren. But anyway, I want to first talk about, you know, I've always heard about the Hawaii Cancer Center at the University of Hawaii. You guys have done great work. But give us an idea of some of the work that the University of Hawaii Cancer Center is doing right now.
Sure. So we are, just to give you some background on the Cancer Center, we are an NCI-designated cancer center, and that means that we're one of the a handful of recognized cancer centers that are specifically given that title by the National Cancer Institute. So you have to meet certain standards in order to actually be an NCI-designated cancer center. And we are the only such center in Hawaii and the Pacific. So it's a very, very proud distinction that we hold. And our focus is to reduce the suffering from cancer among Hawaii's population. And to that end, our focus is research to be able to accomplish those ends, including everything from what traditionally people think of research being bench research in the lab, as well as population-based research, which in Hawaii means, you know, all of our diverse populations, as well as clinical trials to look at experimental treatments to see whether or not we can improve on the current treatments that we have. So the types of research that are going on at the Cancer Center is really, really a broad range. And I have many, many colleagues that have been involved in many different studies that have made a great impact here in Hawaii, as well as nationally and internationally.
Yeah, your work is so tremendous, and Hawaii must be the best place to do research because we have so many different nationalities and ethnic backgrounds, yeah?
It is, and actually that's, you know, one of the areas of research that is really of prime importance here at the Cancer Center is to focus on our multi-ethnic populations and specifically why there are differences in cancer risk and outcome across the populations. So, you know, we have, of all the 50 states, we have the most diverse population in terms of our ethnic composition, and specifically with our Asian and Pacific Islander populations that are really not seen in other areas of the country. And so a big focus has been, you know, looking at these ethnic disparities, because when you focus on differences in cancer risk and outcomes within ethnic and multi-ethnic populations specifically that really can give you clues as to not only what are the risk factors for cancer, but also what might be some genetic susceptibilities that may make some groups more susceptible to cancer than others. And so we know that, you know, with cancer, it's in general, it's a multifactorial disease, meaning that there are many different causes. So it's not, you know, it's very common that one cancer, you know, is caused by a number of different risk factors, and that individuals don't have the same risk. So it's really important to really study these population differences to really fully understand the etiology of cancer.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to do a story on cancer for many years, and only recently we decided to do this because I have about five personal friends of mine, all males, all have stage four cancer, various types, liver, lung, pancreatic. It's a fact of life sometimes. And I saw a statistic that for men especially, 50% of men in Hawaii are going to get some form of cancer in their lifetime.
Right. Well, you know, the cancers that you mentioned, liver, lung, and pancreatic cancer, are really problematic in that they are typically diagnosed at late stages. So with cancer, you know, ideally you want to be able to diagnose it at the earliest stage possible, and so that it's most effectively treated. But with these cancers, oftentimes individuals are diagnosed at late stages when it's much more challenging to treat.
Sure.
And that's why oftentimes, you know, the mortality from those cancers is quite high compared to other cancers where we have, for example, screening available, for example, colorectal cancer, where there's, you know, very effective screening methods to be able to detect those cancers early. So that is one of the challenges, to be able to identify ways to be able to detect these challenging cancers at an earlier stage. But, you know, men in general, I think we all know, men and women, we know that we are all at risk for cancer, and
right,
that cancer isn't really a disease of age. So as we get older, your risk statistically increases.
Right.
But we do know that there are, you know, lifestyle things that can be done to mitigate that risk. There needs to be more research definitely on prevention, because it's not, you know, we all know individuals who've smoked maybe packs of, you know, two packs of cigarettes or more a day for many, many years never developed lung cancer. And then another individual who may have never smoked or smoked very lightly and developed lung cancer. So we know that risk doesn't translate, a risk factor doesn't translate into an individual's individual risk of developing certain cancer, and that there are so many different factors that really contribute to one person's risk of developing cancer.
Yeah, it's amazing how that, like what you just said, somebody that can smoke never gets cancer, and some people that don't smoke get cancer. In fact, I had a friend of mine that's in a magazine that got cancer. He worked in a restaurant with me back in the day, and he got lung cancer, and he didn't smoke. But, of course, back in the 80s, everybody smoked in the restaurants, right? So we had secondhand smoke in there. But does checking the lung, your x-ray of your lungs every year, good preventative or early detection of lung cancer?
Right. Well, so that is a new, a fairly recent development in screening recommendations, is that individuals with who have been, you know, long history of smoking, that they, in consultation with their physician, may be a good candidate for lung cancer screening, which does involve imaging of the lungs to be able to detect tumors early. So that has, you know, that is a fairly recent development, that there hasn't been widespread use of it in a population, but hopefully more individuals who are at risk will be able to, you know, go in for lung cancer screening if their physician recommends it, because we definitely know that is going to make an impact on lung cancer outcomes, including, you know, finding cancers early, treating them more effectively.
Yeah, but it's interesting, you know, when we hear someone has pancreatic cancer, That's a fast-growing cancer. They die relatively faster than other ones, but it's hard to detect pancreatic cancer. Is there a reason why that is?
Well, with pancreatic cancer, very little is known, unfortunately, about the etiology, meaning, what exactly causes it and how it develops. And, for example, we only know that, one of the few risk factors that are known is smoking. So it's a, and as you know, smoking is a risk factor for a number of other cancers. And so individuals who do develop pancreatic cancer are diagnosed at late stages and before any symptoms, are recognized, and they go in for, any type of doctor's visit to be able to perhaps look into the possibility of them having some, chronic issues or other problems that may be signs of pancreatic cancer. But in general, the symptoms are very general and very non-specific, and so individuals, may just not feel well. So that is really one of the challenges of pancreatic cancer, is that one of the reasons the survival rate is so poor is because people are being diagnosed at these late, like you said, your friend who is stage 4 pancreatic cancer, when it's not going to be responsive to surgical treatment, and the treatment has spread, throughout the body, and that makes it much, much more challenging. So with pancreatic cancer, a definite research priority is to be able to identify biomarkers, to be able to identify that's this type of cancer early. So a biomarker would refer to something that can be easily tested in the blood, right, or in some other either easy screening method that could be perhaps incorporated into general screening guidelines as an individual gets older, as are screening guidelines for colon cancer screening, for example. But right now we really don't have any way of routinely detecting pancreatic cancer early.
That's interesting. It's amazing. We've been working on it for so long and so much research that it's still so hard to detect. But, I'm glad you're doing trials, and then we'll talk about that a little bit later on. But I was reading an article. I had the article in front of me. It says, I'm not sure where the statistics came from. It says, in Hawaii, it's estimated that there will be 7,730 new cases of cancer this year. Almost 8,000 cases this year alone. That's a scary number.
That is. And, again, with being a disease largely of an aging population, and as we get, our population does age, we're going to see more cases. So that number increases every single year.
Increases every year.
It increases the number of individuals in Hawaii who are diagnosed with cancer. That does increase every year.
Wow.
And that's just a function of the fact that we are having, a greater number of people who are at the age that they're at higher risk. So with any aging population, you're going to see that, that number go up. That's different, of course, than, if we actually, that's why we present our data both as raw numbers then as rates, because rates kind of give you a better idea, and they adjust for the age of the population, so that you're able to see, is there an actual real increase in certain cancers or a decrease, and so that actually really does allow us to identify those cancers that are at highest priority to be able to address in terms of research. For example, we know that among men, and you were interested in looking at hearing more about cancers in men. So we are seeing increases in a number of specific cancers in men, and that includes melanoma, as well as kidney cancer and testicular cancer, as well as oropharyngeal cancer, and cancer of the pancreas, which we previously talked about. So with melanoma, in Hawaii, we do have high rates of melanoma, and but the fact that it's increasing is problematic, because melanoma is definitely a cancer that can be detected early, with proper screening.
That's
and then
the,
we also
the skin,
know that
right?
there's
that's typically
yeah.
on the skin.
Right. So melanomas actually can grow in other parts and not just the skin. But I'm talking specifically about melanoma of the skin.
Right.
And those cancers are increasing in men in Hawaii as well as in women.
Let me ask you this. I've heard this before, and is it because men don't go to the doctor as often, they don't check up as often, and they go, I'm okay, I'm good. It's not cancer on my skin. That's kind of my mentality, why men don't get it, don't take care of it right away.
Well, at least, there is, anecdotal evidence that, men in general don't access the healthcare system as readily as women. And the same for research, that they're less likely to participate in research than women. In terms of, as you mentioned, identifying a symptom, whereas maybe a woman may say, oh, this doesn't look right, I think I should get it checked out. A man may see a lesion on his skin and say, oh, it's nothing.
Yeah.
I think
I'm a guy. I kind of feel the same way sometimes.
Right. So definitely the vigilance is an important factor in terms of like having an individual say, oh, this is something I should get checked out, or even just being observant of, the regular screening guidelines, knowing that you need to be able to, get colorectal cancer screening on a regular basis, and for women, mammography.
Right. Actually, we did a big story, I believe it was 2019 or 18 on the Susan G. Komen run, and we featured three women on our cover. That was a great story. And my own mother had breast cancer as well. But it's just amazing in Hawaii, the amount of cancer. And it says out of each day tomorrow, 20 people will be diagnosed with cancer, and 7 will die from it. But I thought the amount of deaths for cancer were going down, but the occurrences of cancer has gone up, right?
Right. So that doesn't mean that of those, 20 individuals who are diagnosed with cancer, of those, then a certain percentage will die. What those are referring to is that those deaths are occurring among patients who are diagnosed with cancer either recently or in the past.
Ah, got it.
Yeah.
I got it.
So overall in Hawaii, there are about, as you mentioned, about 7,400 newly diagnosed cases each year among Hawaii residents. And as far as deaths, that's about 2,400 cancer deaths. So that means that those individuals' cause of death was directly attributed to cancer.
Yeah, that's a scary thought. And that is actually my own personal worry as well. It's something that I try to watch as much as possible, especially if my wife is, same age as me, so she's getting started to worry about my health, probably sometimes more than her health, because she's healthy. But she's more about my health, because we see families and my clients and friends, parents pass away, and of course, more times than not, the husband will pass away before the wife, and then the wife's there for like anywhere from 5 to 10 to 20 years living by themselves. And she's worried. You better live as long as possible. She'll tell me. So I say,
I don't want to be left alone.
Right. Yeah. She's going to get to that.
So that's often a good motivation, right? To take care of yourself as a man.
Yeah. I says, well, stop feeding me so much. I probably gained 10 pounds with COVID, but, anyway, everybody, we're here with Dr. Brenda Hernandez from the University of Hawaii, Cancer Center. She's a professor and a doctor. But you do mostly research, yeah?
I'm actually a full-time research professor at the UH Cancer Center. So I'm really, really just really focused on research and running the Hawaii Tumor Registry, which is part of our statewide cancer surveillance program.
Cancer surveillance program, is that clinical trials or just keeping tabs of people that have cancer?
Right. So we're actually, each state has a cancer surveillance program in some form. So and in Hawaii, we're part of both UH, and we actually are, the function of cancer reporting comes out of the state. It's actually a state statute that cancer gets reported statewide in order to be able to address priority areas for not only research but clinical care. So it is part of a statewide mandate, but and tasked with the Department of Health. So we actually run the cancer surveillance program, which is called the Hawaii Tumor Registry, through the University of Hawaii. And so this is a we actually all cancers reported that are diagnosed in the state get reported to us, and that's the way that we are able to track all of the different cancers that are diagnosed, and we do lifetime follow-up to be able to know what the outcomes of, and that's actually really, really critical to be able to come out with these statistics that are really define our priorities for cancer research as well as clinical care.
So when your doctor, whatever hospital they're at, diagnose you that, they send the data to you folks over the University of Hawaii?
Yes. Oh. Yeah. So we work with all facilities throughout the state and physicians that diagnose cancer, and they report that information confidentially to us, and then that is actually becomes part of the information that not only informs statewide statistics but also nationally. So when you hear reports that come out of the National Cancer Institute that this cancer or that cancer may be increasing or decreasing, that we are part of those statistics because we contribute to that through the Hawaii Tumor Registry's efforts.
Interesting. That's great. That's a good thing. It is still prevalent. It's still probably the one. Cancer is probably the major disease that we see more prevalent than any other disease, right? Or is heart and
right? Well, it's right. It's a close second in terms of causes. The top causes of death in the state. Mm-hmm. So heart disease is number one, and then a close second is cancer.
Oh, I see. And I want to talk briefly before we take a break here about liver cancer, and that's one of the top cause of cancer death in the U.S., let alone Hawaii. Isn't that true?
Yes, and liver cancer is especially problematic for us here in Hawaii because not only do we have higher rates of liver cancer, so more individuals, in the population, are being diagnosed with liver cancer compared to our counterparts in the mainland U.S., but also our death rates are higher. And liver cancer, like pancreatic cancer, oftentimes is diagnosed at late stages when it's most difficult to treat.
And the major causes, you said hepatitis B and C?
Right. So, liver cancer is a really good example of the multifactorial nature of cancer because there are a number of different specific causes. So hepatitis B and C are specific causes. Other causes are alcohol, excess alcohol consumption, cigarette smoking, as well as increasingly we're seeing more cases related to metabolic conditions, and that includes obesity, type 2 diabetes, hypertension, and hyperlipidemia, which is high cholesterol. And so those are collectively are considered metabolic factors. And so we know that not only in Hawaii, but in the U.S. overall, there's an increasing number of cases of liver cancer that are attributed to metabolic conditions.
Well, the number of people that are obese is huge.
Right, and that has a lot to do with increasing obesity, because with obesity comes a lot of these metabolic disorders like hypertension and high cholesterol, type 2 diabetes. And so these all really act together, not only to increase the risk of liver cancer, but a number of other cancers. So it is really, really a priority to try to look at ways of mitigating metabolic disorder, but also prevention is huge. How to actually prevent and reduce your risk of metabolic-related cancers like liver cancer.
Yeah, well, last year we did a story on diabetes, and we have a very high rate of diabetes in Hawaii per capita, probably one of the leaders in the country for diabetes.
Right, and we do see, that diabetes is an independent risk factor for liver cancer, so it is a major priority as far as reducing, the risk of liver cancer.
It's amazing. You're not scaring me. It's not depressing me, but it's just a fact of life. And you know, I'm about solutions. I'm trying to think, okay, we got to do more stories on preventative and healthy aging, because cancer is a big issue in Hawaii. It's amazing. We're going to take a short break. We're here with Dr. Brenda Hernandez from the Cancer Research Center of Hawaii. And she was a very big contributor to our cancer story that we did March, April, with the Quest of Cancer. So if you missed it, go to our website, generations808.com, pull that down, because it's a great article on research and data. And I was really impressed with the different topics, but also on the clinical trials that are out there. And I want to ask you later on, Brenda, can I participate in some form or fashion of that? So we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
In 2021, take the confusion out of Medicare. The Copeland Insurance Group will help you understand the exciting new plans with increased benefits for seniors 65 and above, veterans, the disabled, and those that qualify for extra help. Contact Margaret Wong with the Copeland Insurance Group at 808-591-4877. 808-591-4877. Mahalo.
You've worked hard to make it to this point, faithfully paying your mortgage and putting money into your home. Now you can tap into this equity with the reverse mortgage loan designed specifically for those age 60 and older. Percy Ihara, Hawaii's reverse mortgage specialist, NMLS number 582-944. Let him show you how you can use a reverse mortgage to gain a new source of funds, just as you would with a traditional home equity loan that you would get at a local bank, but with additional benefits. Give him a call at 808-234-3117, and he'll show you how a reverse mortgage could be an important tool for you. He lives and works right here in Hawaii and understands Hawaii borrowers. Not applicable in all states. Some states may impose a higher age requirement. Visit reversefunding.com/equity-elite for details. Reverse Mortgage Funding LLC is an equal housing lender. 1455 Broad Street, Bloomfield, New Jersey, 07003. NMLS number 1019941. Telephone 888-494-0882. For licensing information, go to nmlsconsumeraccess.org. Licensed Mortgage Banker, New York State Department of Financial Services. Again, call 808-234-3117.
Welcome back to Generations Radio. I am Percy Ihara, your host, every Sunday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. And by the way, you can also go to 866. Or just click on your dial on Spectrum, and you can listen to Oldies Channel 101.1 on your TV. So sometimes I put on my TV because my wife goes, "Honey, can we do something else besides watch sports all day long?" So I'll put that on, or I'll put on the 70s and 80s music to not always watch sports. So anyway, don't forget, August 24th, which is a Wednesday, we're going to begin our monthly Realities of Aging workshops. It's in one room at the Alamoana Hotel. Check out the magazine and call to reserve a space and give me a call. You know, just leave me a message that you want to come and give me an idea what kind of topics you're looking for. And I'll register you. Don't have to call me back. I'm not going to call you back. I'll put your name down. Right now, we have a lot of room, so we still have a month out. But check that out. And it'll be the fourth Wednesday of every month going forward, 2022. October 1st, we have our big Aging in Place workshop. We haven't done it for 2 years because of COVID. So we expect a big crowd. We have the whole floor of the Alamoana Hotel, mezzanine level, where we're going to have six rooms of speakers. Every hour we'll be switching out. So in the morning we have three sessions, and we will replay them in the afternoon. So 18 different sessions in the morning. And look at our magazine. It'll be in our September-October issue. It'll be on our website as it comes out, and we'll put it on our Facebook page, our Generations Magazine Facebook page as well. Hopefully we'll get an article in a newspaper. It'll have a schedule of all the speakers and times. Please come early. It is packed. And stay late if you can. There's a great Starbucks downstairs. So if you want to grab a bite to eat between the workshops, between the morning and afternoon session, please do go down there. Bring your own bento. But we'll be there all day, October 1st. That's the 14th annual Aging in Place workshop. So anyway, don't forget, you can always go to generations808.com to check out all our past radio shows, issues, and all our upcoming events. So thank you very much to Malin Moore, the radio guy, the traffic that handles our website. But anyway, we're here with today with Brenda Hernandez, UH cancer professor, mostly on research. And, you know, Brenda, I want to talk about the research you do here. Now, we talked about liver cancer, how prevalent it is. Are there specific clinical trials on specific types of cancer, or are you looking for people that are older that are healthy or have cancer?
Right. Well, we actually have a study on liver cancer, and actually it is not for liver cancer patients, but for individuals who may be at risk for liver cancer, but it is called cyanotoxins and liver cancer development. And so we had previously talked about the risk factors for liver cancer, but there are, we do believe that there are some liver cancers that may not be related to any of these risk factors or may have other factors that are contributing along with factors such as hepatitis viruses to increase the risk of liver cancer. So this study is a really interesting study that we started last year and are currently recruiting individuals who are residents of Hawaii to participate in. And this study specifically focused on what it's called cyanotoxins. And these are toxins that are produced by certain phyla of cyanobacteria. So cyanobacteria are very, very widespread phyla of environmental bacteria. So they're found in water and soil and plants. If they are contaminating bodies of water, seafood can also be affected. They can accumulate within fish and shellfish. And the reason it's concerning is that certain of these cyanobacteria do produce these toxins that can specifically target the liver. And these liver toxins are, we are looking at the possibility that these liver toxins produced by cyanobacteria may be contributing to the increased rates of liver cancer we're seeing in Hawaii. We also are partnering with our colleagues in Guam, because Guam also has a higher rate of liver cancer. And so this same study, we're doing it both in Guam and Hawaii.
Guam.
As part of our as part of our U54 partnership. So we have a large research partnership between the University of Guam, University of Hawaii Cancer Center to conduct cancer research. And this is one of the studies, the current studies that we are doing at both Guam and Hawaii. And interestingly, this research really started off in Guam because we were looking at betel nut chewing, betel nut chewing is actually a very important risk factor for oral cancer development in the Pacific. So betel nut is actually comes from the Areca catechu tree, and it's a common practice in certain parts of Asia and the Pacific,
right.
And it's chewed, and it's a very addictive substance. And so most individuals who chew, you know, do it habitually for many years, and it does increase the risk of oral cancer development. So we conducted a study in Guam to look at, why individuals who are chewing betel nut were developing oral cancers. And one of the things that we focused on are changes in the mouth in terms of the types of bacteria that were in the mouth. Because as you might know, have you heard the term microbiome?
Yes, I have.
Yeah. So microbiome really refers to the bacterial microbiome really refers to the composition of the types of bacteria that are in your body. And it said that we have more bacteria than we actually have human cells.
Right. And so I heard that one before.
Right.
That's
right.
Scary.
And so the mouth has a specific composition of different bacteria, up to several hundred types. So what we found in Guam was that people who were chewing this betel nut chronically had different composition of bacteria than individuals who weren't chewers. And specifically, this cyanobacteria was a bacteria that was more abundant in chewers. And so that really got us to think about, could it be these, perhaps there their toxins that are related to the oral cancer development. But Guam, at the same time, we were doing some research on liver cancer, and liver cancer, actually the rates of liver cancer in Guam are higher than they are in Hawaii. So we started doing some environmental testing of their plants, including these areca nut plants, and did find that we could that cyanobacteria was one of the most prominent bacteria that we found among these plant samples from Guam. And then we tested those samples as well as the oral samples from the betel nut chewers and found the same toxins in them. And so that really, really, that piqued our interest in looking at these cyanotoxins in relation to liver cancer. And so now that actually really was the basis of this study that we're currently doing. So we want to look at the possibility that these toxins produced by these bacteria maybe increase the risk of liver cancer development. So as part of the study, we really want individuals who don't have a history of cancer. So we want to look at specifically individuals 40 to 70 who are residents here and are eligible to just come in for one visit. And what we do is we look at their liver. We do a scan of their liver. So this is an ultrasound, specific ultrasound technique called a FibroScan, and it images the liver. And that what we're able to tell from that image is the degree of fibrosis, which is really damage to the liver, as well as steatosis, which is fat in the liver. So the degree of damage in the liver or fibrosis, as well as the degree of steatosis or fat, really does increase the risk of liver cancer. So the more fibrosis and steatosis an individual have, the greater their risk of liver cancer. So we do an ultrasound of the liver, and then we also do other measurements like height and weight and blood pressure, as well as take measures of your cholesterol and your insulin and other measures. And then we ask you questions about your some of the exposures you may have had as part of your daily living, including some of the things you drink and eat, and how much activities, how much time you spend in water activities and other things. So it's a one-time visit that we do here, and then I should mention that we also collect saliva and urine and blood as part of the study to be able to specifically look at the cyanotoxins.
Well, that's a it's like a one-day affair or something?
Right. Well, actually, it takes maybe an hour typically.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and we have a small clinic here at the Cancer Center to do research studies. So individuals come here to the Cancer Center, and then they do about an hour visit. Individuals do have to fast before, because the blood sample that we take, we do testing that requires fasting. And then as part of that, you actually get a summary of your test results, and then you also get a $50 gift card. It's for your time and effort. So it's an interesting study to participate in. And because we're doing it in Hawaii and Guam, we really will be able to really look at two high-risk populations, Guam and Hawaii.
Are you still looking for people? Because I'd be interested.
Oh, yes, we are.
Oh, okay.
And so if anyone is interested, you can email us at liverhealth@cc.hawaii.edu or call us at 808-564-5828.
Okay. So can you email that information to me?
Yes, I will.
Dr. Brenda,
sure.
I'd love to sign up for that. So my here's how I think. I'm listening to you. I can do all that. It's great information, great data you can collect. Will I get a diagnosis of that, anything?
So what we do share with you is, most importantly, is the FibroScan results, which does show you the degree of fibrosis in your liver, as well as the liver fat, the amount of fat in your liver. And that information can be shared. So it's not a diagnostic test that would go as part of your medical record. However, we provide you that so that you can share it with your physician, so that if there are, you have a high degree of fibrosis, steatosis, you can follow up with your physician. And then we also give you the other test results, like your cholesterol, your triglycerides, and other things.
Right.
So those are all part of, something that you can get out of the study. And in the altruistic part about it is that you're contributing to really, really important research because we really, these cyanotoxins are really not well studied in human populations. Most of the studies have been done in animal models and in cells. And so we really don't have a good handle of how widespread exposure to these toxins are and what are the health consequences.
Hmm. Yeah, I'd be more happy to do it. I love the fact that I still get a $50 gift certificate.
yes.
Not that it's important, but hey, anything free. I mean, at least I'm getting something for my time.
But exactly.
You know, like I said, this story, cancer has always interested me because I've seen so many people. I don't have a whole lot of my family. My mother had breast cancer. I think my sister had a little bit, but they caught it really early. But other than that, not that I'm aware of tremendously. We have a lot of good aging in our family, but I'd be very interested. Yeah, if you can email the information. So let's say I sign up this week. What's this, end of July? When would I do it, like next month or 3 weeks out or a month out?
So, yeah, our study coordinator will be able to schedule a visit, you know, for you, a study visit for you and, you know, be able to actually screen for eligibility and then schedule you for a visit. So usually we do it in the morning so people don't have to go all day without eating. Great, that would be, and any of your listeners who are interested, you know, also do the same, contact us.
Yeah, is it more so for men versus women? Because I know you put men and women, but is it more so for men?
Well, liver cancers in general, there's about a 3-to-1 ratio. So men, you know, do have much higher rates than women.
Wow.
And, you know, really the basis for that is really not known. And so that is really a really important problem that, you know, why are men at higher risk of liver cancer than women?
Yeah, I get that part. They probably drink more than women, too. You know?
Well, there's definitely certain risk factors that are more prominent in men.
Common question I just popped in my head. I'm a consumer as well, but does drinking beer worse than drinking like hard liquor or wine?
Well, it's the ethanol content itself.
S&L.
And so ethanol, so alcohol.
What's ethanol?
Yeah. Oh, ethanol?
Oh, like, ethanol.
Yes, it's just a scientific name for alcohol. So it's really just the alcohol content. Right. So typically in studies, it's important to be able to not only know the type of alcohol, because that actually then informs it's not only the content of that particular sort of wine versus beer, but also how much is consumed and how frequently. Because there's increasing interest in looking at the differences between individuals who may have drink socially versus on a regular basis versus someone who has, you know, daily use at high levels. And then more so for our younger population, binge drinking, where there's really excessive drinking at, you know, maybe on weekends and then not in other parts of the time. So there's increasing research into alcohol in terms of, it's really important to quantify the types of exposure, and it's really been, you know, liver cancer definitely is a cancer that is definitely associated with alcohol intake, but there are a number of other cancers that there has been shown to be increased risk, including oral cancers. As I mentioned, oral cancers are, you know, important problem in the Pacific as well as in Hawaii. We're seeing increasing rates of oral cancer in men and women in Hawaii.
Hmm. And what's the cause of that? Besides, is it like,
yeah? So the key risk factors for oral pharyngeal and oral cavity cancers are smoking. That's a primary risk.
Mm-hmm. Chewing tobacco,
right?
There are
also increasing number of oral pharyngeal cancers, particular, and that includes cancers of the base of tongue and tonsil that are attributed to human papillomavirus. So that is a virus that is a very common sexually transmitted virus and typically attributed to as a main causal agent of cervical cancer. But it can also cause a host of other cancers, including penile cancers, anal cancers, and oral pharyngeal cancers. And so we're seeing an increasing amount of oral cancers, oral pharyngeal cancers specifically related to human papillomavirus.
What's causing that, though? How are you getting that?
Oral, you know, through sexual practices is one main way of getting exposure to HPV in the oral cavity, as well as in other parts of, you know, your genitalia through sexual practices. And so it is primarily a sexually transmitted infection.
Oh.
Most individuals are infected at some point in their lives. However, most individuals never develop any cancer related to it. But it's that it's a subset of individuals who develop a persistent infection either of the in the cervix or in the oral cavity or other parts of the body that are increasing their risk of HPV-related cancer.
Hmm. You mentioned betel nut. That a lot of specific countries have that practice, but is that like almost like chewing tobacco, you know, like baseball players?
It
chew
is,
tobacco.
And actually, there are different ways of betel nut is chewed, and some individuals in Guam, one of the common ways of chewing it is just the nut itself, and so the husk is removed and then it's chewed. The areca nut is chewed in itself, and other in other parts of the Pacific as well as in Asia, they'll crush it and then mix it, either chew it alone or mix it with alcohol or tobacco, and then also with lime. And then that actually is wrapped in a certain leaf, and in Guam it's this piper beetle leaf, and so it's wrapped up all together as a quid, and then that mixture is chewed. So we have done research on both looking at the betel nut chewed in itself as well as the quid, and there's a lot of research going on right now through the U54 Guam Hawaii partnership that's focused specifically on betel nut as a risk for cancer.
Interesting.
As well as how to stop chewing betel nut. So we actually have colleagues here who have a lot of experience in smoking cessation and have translated that same approach to ways to reduce betel nut chewing, because it is like tobacco smoking, it's a habitual practice. And so it's a behavioral change. It has to, it's not something that someone quits easily.
Yeah, I mean, plus it's like smoke is, you're inhaling versus this is direct contact to your skin.
That makes
a big difference, like chewing tobacco. A lot of baseball players, you know, I see some old stories where they had to cut off their chin and part of their lip and their mouth, they had to totally cut it out.
Right. And you know, with this betel nut-related oral cancer, you really do typically see it on the sides of the mouth where the betel nut or quid is actually retained in the mouth
right,
and chewed.
Right.
So oftentimes it's typical for someone who chews betel nut to keep it in their mouth all day. And so the exposure is high.
Yeah, and it's something that they do daily. I know guys that are still chewing tobacco to this day. They're all baseball player friends of mine that still chew tobacco to this day. Like, wow,
that is
amazing.
Right.
I mean, high school or college, yeah, but to continue to do it 30, 40 years later is incredible. I'm just so surprised that people still do that to this day. But it is a terrible habit. But anyway, any other clinical trials that you're working on that we can offer to our listeners? Because guys, hey, seriously, check this out. Sign up. See if you qualify. I'm going to do that. Plus, you get a $50 gift card, which is, hey, isn't bad, Dr. Brenda.
Yeah, well, we actually have a number of different studies that are looking for volunteers to participate in at the Cancer Center, including studies to look at is there's a shape-up study that actually looks at body composition and ways to change individuals' body composition, and that is there's one for children as well as for adults. And there's also a study looking at meditation, mindfulness meditation, specifically for individuals who have been diagnosed with cancer, to see whether or not, you know, this kind of approach can help in terms of coping with stressors such as anxiety and depression. And so there's a number of different research studies going on that definitely would welcome participants.
Hmm.
So individuals can find out more about these studies if they go to the UH Cancer Center website, and under the community heading, there are listed a number of studies that individuals can find out more about.
So is that the one, uhcancercenter.org?
Yes.
Okay, guys. Great information, Dr. Brenda. We got to have you back on down the road. But it's something that we want to inform the public, especially men, and it's something that their wives going to thank us because they were trying to make their husbands live longer, you know, like my wife. But it's just so important that we educate and be proactive and start planning ahead down the road. It is something that we always try to do, and that's why our workshops that start August 24th is called The Realities of Aging. What's really going to happen to you? Like I said, people always hope they live longer or hope they die faster, but he only above us knows what's going to go on, and obviously how you take care of your body and your mind is important. But I thank you so much, Dr. Brenda. I appreciate you helping with the article that we did in March, April. And guys, check it out on our website. It's called the Quest for Cancer Cure. And through the research and through the local clinical trials, that's only going to carry us forward. So please participate as much as you can and support the University of Hawaii. You guys do a great job over there, Dr. Brenda. So thank you very much. Appreciate your time. I know your busy schedule, but didn't want to thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much. And we appreciate what you do as well.
Yeah, I mean, we do this all day long. We love what we do. We support the information with the people. And, you know, we want to be able to resource for our listeners. So thank you very much. So, guys, don't forget, August 24th is our mini-series, Realities of Aging at the Ala Moana Hotel. It's in, I believe, the Plumeria Room. Please call the magazine 6343, I believe the phone number is. Leave me a message if you're going to come. 4383, 600-4383. And if there's any specific topic you want to hear about. And don't forget, on October 1st is our big Aging in Place workshop, where we have 6 rooms going on at one time with different speakers. We'll have 18 workshops in the morning. We'll replay them in the afternoon. So, Dr. Brenda, if your parents are alive, you're worried about yourself, please check us out. It is very busy and very crowded. All the rooms are full. So thanks to all our sponsors that will be announcing that very shortly. So anyway, thanks, everybody. As always, 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock a.m. on the Oldies Channel here at 101.1 every Sunday morning. As always, everybody, have a great weekend. Aloha and live well.
In 2021, take the confusion out of Medicare. The Copeland Insurance Group will help you understand the exciting new plans with increased benefits for seniors 65 and above, veterans, the disabled, and those that qualify for extra help. Contact Margaret Wong with the Copeland Insurance Group at 808-591-4877. 808-591-4877. Mahalo.
The combination of interest rates at near all-time lows and home values at near all-time highs create a great opportunity to get the most out of your home's built-up equity. Percy Ihara, Hawaii's reverse mortgage specialist at MLS number 582-944. If you are 60 or older, you might qualify for a reverse mortgage loan that could turn your equity into extra funds for retirement. Take a few minutes to visit with him about ways this plan could work for you. As a certified senior advisor and being certified in long-term care planning, he has helped many older homeowners just like you to retire more freely. Call him now at 808-234-3117. That's 808-234-3117. Not applicable in all states. Some states may impose a higher age requirement. Visit reversefunding.com/equity-elite for details. Reverse Mortgage Funding LLC is an equal housing lender. 1455 Broad Street, Bloomfield, New Jersey, 07003. NMLS number 1019941. Telephone 888-494-0882. For licensing information, go to nmlsconsumeraccess.org. Licensed Mortgage Banker, New York State Department of Financial Services. Again, call 808-234-3117.